The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
A very good morning to you, Mr. Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, my little snippet for the morning before we get into the main news involves the so-called Kotel Compromise Plan. And this is a plan that surrounds the Western Wall Plaza and the use of the Western Wall for religious purposes, and precisely who has control over what rules apply in that particular Western Wall area. Now, traditionally, there is a chief rabbi of the wall, and he generally has the say over what goes down and what does not go down. The rules that are being applied in the Kotel area are not universally accepted by all different strains of Judaism. For those people who visited the Kotel, you will know that, for example, men and women are separated out. Not everybody necessarily concurs with the view that when you visit such a holy place that you aren't able to do so together with your entire family. Some people would prefer that. It's not currently allowed where the current rules are concerned. Another issue, a big issue that has come up in the Kotel area involves prayer services run by women. Now, this has been a controversial topic of conversation in many different Jewish groups. There is a group in Israel called the Women of the Wall, and they have insisted each Rosh Chodesh, once a month, on running a service at the Kotel conducted by women for women entirely. And there are certain strains of Orthodox Judaism that don't necessarily oppose this whole idea of women conducting a service for women. Unfortunately, it doesn't go down with the chief rabbi of the wall, and hence there is this Kotel Compromise Plan that is currently being worked upon, which involves also President Isaac Herzog, who has become embroiled in this conversation. Lots and lots of discussions backwards and forwards. A plan has been put together by the Reform and Conservative organizations who wish to somehow try to conjure up a way of a modus operandi that will speak to their membership as well as to Orthodox Jews. As always with Jewish subjects, getting to a compromise and getting to an agreement is no simple thing. And the work continues to try and see if we can come up with something of a compromise solution. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is involved as well, amongst other members of government. This is going to be still an issue that's going to roll for some time.
Always gladdens my heart to see the world joining as one in the fight against this pandemic. After all, we're all in it together. And now Israel is donating 1 million vaccinations to COVAX. What made them come to this decision?
It's not clear exactly where the decision comes from. We understand that Israel will be sending 1 million AstraZeneca vaccines to COVAX to African countries. Some of the statistics coming out of Africa are relatively scary, like, for example, the rate of inoculation across the African continent is reported in the stuff that I've read to be only around 6%, which is very, very low. And so obviously, to the extent that the COVAX program can contribute to higher rates of vaccination in Africa, that would be welcome. And Israel has decided to join the effort by donating these 1 million doses of AstraZeneca. I just wonder whether this doesn't come from a place, not from a bad place, but just from a place of having something of an oversupply of vaccines, because Israel has traditionally used the Pfizer and to some extent the Moderna vaccines across the population. For Pfizer in particular is more difficult because it needs certain refrigeration facilities and things like that. But a very little AstraZeneca seems to be rolled out around Israel. And I just wonder whether Israel might not be sitting on fairly significant stocks of AstraZeneca that might be coming up to their sell-by date, and therefore it would be obviously much, much preferable to donate those vaccines to COVAX or to any other country that would be able to make good use of them. So I think that this is exactly the way that things ought to go. I also know that donating countries will usually need to foot the cost of the transportation of the vaccine to wherever the destination location will be. So, I mean, this is good from every possible perspective, even if one might be a little cynical and say, well, you know, the alternative might be to throw these vaccines out because Israel probably won't use them. But it's certainly better to donate them than to throw them out. And of course, a few other COVID-related updates that are going on. First of all, Israel has added a number of new countries to its red list of countries, places where Israelis are not allowed to travel to, and Israelis coming from those countries need to go into an extended period of quarantine. The new countries include Spain and include France and include, actually, ironically, the United Arab Emirates, which is a destination that Israelis have been going to quite frequently in recent times, particularly during the COVID period, because it has been open to Israelis. But other countries that are on the list include Ireland and Norway and Finland and Sweden, to add to the UK and Denmark that were already on the list. And of course, many African countries, most of Africa indeed, not only South or Southern Africa, but indeed most African countries are on that list. So the list has expanded over time. And of course, this means less travel to and from those countries, because even though foreigners are still not allowed to come to Israel from any destination, this will also limit travel by Israelis to and from those destinations. And lots of controversy surrounding the implementation of the Green Pass system in malls tomorrow. Now, apparently, the government has decided that the idea of putting bracelets on people is not practical, and they will not insist upon that. But they're leaving it up to each and every mall to decide how they will implement the Green Pass system. But the principle remains that the only people who are allowed to go into malls other than for particular urgent activities, the only people allowed in malls are people who have a Green Pass. So I'm going to actually try the system out tomorrow and see how it works. I will go along to a mall. Let's see what they make me do, what they make me produce in order to prove that I have a Green Pass, and how I might be restricted or whatever restrictions might be in place. I'm going to be very interested to see how that pans out.
Anthony, looking at the way Israel has taken the pandemic as serious as they have from the outset, they were actually the leaders in the manner in which they would shut down, they would go out, they would ensure there was proper vaccination campaigns in place, and they ensured that the population was kept informed and updated on what was happening. The rest of the world doesn't seem to be taking it as seriously this time, and in fact some countries have lessened their restrictions. I have to ask the question, does Israel know something that the rest of the world doesn't know?
I think that Israel has something of an advantage because it is a small country, and that it is relatively easy, therefore, small in terms of numbers of people and small in terms of geographic location. So at times that works against us, but I think that over the time of the pandemic, that's really worked in our favor, because it's been easy to transport vaccines to even so-called far-flung corners of Israel, which are not so far-flung. They're not so distant. They're not so remote. Easy to get vaccines. They're easy to communicate with people. Israel is very much a connected society. So most people will be getting news, will be online, will be available to listen to updates. Israel also has a culture of tuning in. Because of our security situation, people listen to the news. Certainly in the earlier days of Israel, 20, 30 years ago, it was common practice on public transportation every hour on the hour for the driver to make sure that the news was played to all people on the bus. And as soon as you could hear the news pips going, the volume would go up on the bus and every passenger on the bus would quieten down while everybody listened to the news. So there's a certain culture about that which we have here, which you don't necessarily see in other countries. And I think it's also been a willingness by the government on our side to take some risks, and to be prepared to be involved in some of the research that's gone on during the course of applying the vaccination program. For example, Pfizer chose to roll out their research program, their test program in Israel, because it's small, because we can get to people, because there is a good health system where Pfizer could rely on the fact that the vaccines would be rolled out in a good way, and a very good recording system so that Pfizer could in return get information back knowing that it would be accurately recorded. And so Israel had some sort of an advantage that they, I think, have played upon in order to be at the forefront of whatever is going on. But I think there's also a lot of guesswork and risk-taking. If you have one or two scientists within Israel working on things that come up with conclusions which might not be foregone conclusions, they might not be deeply researched, but they seem to be anecdotal, and there seems to be some science to support that, the Israeli government seems to have been willing to go out on a limb, to take a risk, to take a chance, and just to use the benefit of that research, to rely upon it because it's reliable, comes from a good place, in order to implement policies in Israel. So I think that that's really where our advantages come from. These days, it seems like we're not one of the most vaccinated societies. A lot of people are pushing back a little bit and saying, I don't know about this. We're already almost rolling on to our fourth vaccine. They're talking about vaccinating people with a fourth dose sometime during January and February. People are starting to get a little bit circumspect about how many vaccinations it's going to take until we can eventually get rid of this. And each round we see has less and less people being vaccinated. The uptake by children, for example, of the vaccine has been relatively slow, accelerated in recent weeks. So there's some ambivalence as well about this. But currently the program says, keep things open, keep schools open, keep business open, keep doing whatever we can do without closing things down. The economy is everything. The economy at this stage is very, very important, and we want to try and keep everything rolling. So let's get people vaccinated and keep people working. That's currently the strategy that's being followed.
Well, it's very important, and we appreciate the fact that Israel has always erred on the side of caution. They've been an example to the rest of the world, especially in the early days of the pandemic. And even here in South Africa, if you look at Chai FM as an example, they followed the Israeli route. We still are in partial lockdown, where the majority of the staff members at Chai FM do work from home. Even my business, we followed the example of Chai FM, which followed the example of Israel. Our staff are working remotely. We created a bubble. We're trying to maintain the bubble until the all clear one day comes. And that's because of Israel and the way Israel approached this from the outset. But moving on, because we've only got a little bit of time left, I would look at this as a positive. I don't know about you, but the prices of houses in Israel have risen more than 10% in the last 12 months. Now, normally this would be a sign of perhaps a booming economy or things are improving. Am I wrong?
There's no doubt that Israel's economy is very vibrant. It is growing in spite of the pandemic. We've seen the shekel rise to amongst its highest, strongest levels in many, many years. And now we have that, but the price of housing going up by 10.3% over the last 12 months. This is the biggest 12-month rise that Israel has seen since 2010. Now, a lot of people in Israel would be very upset and very despondent about this, because with the increase in the price of housing comes also the difficulty of our younger generation to get their foot onto the housing ladder. It's become a practical impossibility for young people who are just starting out, who've just recently qualified, who are in their first or their second job. It's become almost impossible for them to be able to buy a house. Not only because the prices are very high, but also taking a mortgage in Israel involves getting up to a maximum of around 50 or 60% of the value of the property that you're buying, which means that people have to bring liquid cash deposits of 40 or 50% of the value of the house, which is already a very, very high price. So for some people, it's very concerning that the house prices are going up so quickly, particularly at this time of year. And this period of time in the economy and everything that we've dealt with the pandemic over the past while. And this comes in spite of the fact that the supply of houses just seems to be growing constantly. Wherever you drive in Israel, there are cranes, there is construction. Wherever you go, there is almost no exception. It just seems like new houses, new apartment buildings are being built at an alarming rate, and yet the price continues to go up, because the laws of economics would suggest that when the supply goes up, the price should come down. But that just doesn't seem to be the case. And obviously that's because the demand is currently matching the supply or even maybe overtaking the supply. And some of this demand, we understand, has come from people who have wanted to buy properties as investment properties because there was recently a rise in the purchase tax associated with buying a property. There was something of a rush to get in to buy investment properties before the cost of that purchase tax was increased.
But and I'm sorry to cut you short, we're about to end, but all in all, I think it's positive, especially when you talk about how the shekel has strengthened against other currencies. Fascinating conversation. We're going to take it up another time because I see the positive. Others, of course, do see the negative, especially with the first-time homeowners. But all in all, it shows that the economy is vibrant. Anthony Reichman, thank you so much for joining us again this morning.